Following WCBM program has been pre-recorded at this time.
The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Everybody, we're back for the second hour of the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing and hunting in the great outdoors. And today we're focusing on Canada geese with Bill Harvey, the game bird section leader of the Maryland's Wildlife and Heritage Service Department of Natural Resources. Josh Homniak's here. He's the waterfowl program manager, Wildlife and Heritage Service Department of Natural Resources. Those two fellows work together and for the same service here in Maryland. And then we have with us Paul Padding, who's the Atlantic Flyway representative, Division of the Migratory Bird Management, Division of Migratory Bird Management of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Paul comes to us from Laurel at the Patuxent Wildlife Research Center. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's where we do a lot of things with waterfowl, not just what you do, but we have the sea duck diving program there to figure out what sea duck eat on a daily basis.
Right.
And we also have the game bird banding or bird banding headquarters there for the world.
Bird banding laboratory.
Laboratory, yes. For the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So a lot of good stuff happening here in Maryland. And Bill and Paul are going to talk a little bit about the process and the federal framework and how that all works together to determine how our seasons are set and what our migratory game bird harvest bag limits are set. Is that, did I say that correctly, Bill?
That's correct.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so we ended the last segment where we were talking about the role of the Flyway Council. And,
right.
And as it relates to AP geese, the recommendation that came from the Flyway Council in late September relative to AP geese was to go to a restrictive hunting package in the 1920 season. So those recommendations that come out of the Flyway Councils eventually go to the Fish and Wildlife Service because they're migratory birds. They have the ultimate approval of these things. And once they're approved by the service, what we actually get to work with are called the federal frameworks. And maybe Paul could spend a couple minutes describing what the federal frameworks are and how the states work within those.
Sure. The frameworks are set on a flyway scale, and they are the length of a season, how many days you get for the season, the daily bag limit and possession limit, and the earliest date a season can start and the latest date a season can extend to.
Right.
In the case of AP geese, these frameworks are somewhat state-specific because of the flyway's desire to allocate the harvest of AP geese in an equitable manner. So the outside dates differ from state to state and on a latitudinal gradient, and also the daily bag limit differs a little bit.
Okay. So it's quite a chore to come up with the different numbers that each state can carry, that each state can hold, that each state can support. And we talked about some states don't have a long season. Some states don't have as many birds. Some states don't have as much hunting pressure, number of hunters, and so forth. But here in Maryland, as we mentioned before, in the Delmarva Peninsula, this is where the geese are in the winter. And that's why our seasons are set the way they are. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Good.
Yep. That's why the bag limit is the way it is.
Right.
It's one bird less than the bag limit for AP geese further north of the Delmarva area, because there are a lot more AP geese here during the season.
And we put a lot more pressure on
them.
I got it. Well, I think our numbers, and Josh may be able to speak to that, I think we sell something like 52 or 53,000 bird permits.
And that's about right.
That's something in the low to mid-50s we only sell 90,000 some licenses here. So we know at least more than half of our guys are waterfowl hunters and drawn to waterfowl hunting. And you go to the Eastern Shore now and, you know, you look at any back of any pickup truck, they've got some kind of duck or goose image on the back, you know, and that's the culture, no question about it. Hence the outcry when the announcement was made about, hey, we got to talk about next year's season. And I know that some of the guides and outfitters are concerned about that, and of course they're concerned about the economic impact of how this is going to happen. So, but it's all based on conservation. It's based on the Migratory Game Bird Treaty that's 100 years old and a process that's been in place for generations, so to speak.
And and relative to AP geese, the hunting seasons are based on what we call a harvest strategy that has been developed over the years with input from all the states. I mean, the flyway process, it's democratic, so each state gets one vote, but things are really done cooperatively. So, relative to the hunting seasons for AP geese, it's really not all that difficult on an annual basis, because what we do under a certain set of conditions has already been laid out in the harvest strategy. It was agreed to years ago, and that's how we operate going forward. One thing that people have talked about a lot is, well, why is Maryland going to be more restrictive relative to, say, New York or Pennsylvania? And one thing people have to realize is that within a state, there's different hunting zones based on really where especially where the migrant geese are harvested. So in Maryland, what we call the AP zone, which is where the hunting season is driven by the whatever the status is of AP geese, that includes the Eastern Shore, Southern Maryland. It's basically east of 95 in Maryland. And so west of 95, where there's a few migrant geese in that area, but very few. Mostly there's resident geese. So west of 95, that's what we call our late resident zone, where we have a longer season with a liberal bag limit. East of 95, that's where the regulations are driven by the status of AP geese. And pretty much all the states, New York, Pennsylvania, they all have these zones that correspond to where it's really important for the managing migrant geese. So, like in Pennsylvania, for example, their AP zone is mainly in southeast Pennsylvania, because
right.
That's where they harvest.
Susquehanna River.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just like Maryland, next year, all the states all the hunting seasons in the AP zones for all the states will be going through what we call a restrictive package. So it'll be 30 days long. So all the states will have no more than a 30-day season in the AP zone. Now, the bag limit in the Chesapeake region, which Josh said earlier was Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia, we're going to have a one-bird daily bag limit. North of us, they'll have a two-bird daily bag limit. Now, why is that? It's mainly because if you look at the harvest of geese in the Chesapeake region, a high proportion of the geese are AP geese. Maybe 70 or 80% of the geese we kill in the AP zone are AP geese. Maybe 20% are resident geese. In New York and Pennsylvania, even in the AP zones they have, they kill, proportionally speaking, more resident geese. And in our flyway, you know, we're really concerned about migrant Canada geese and their status, but we're also really concerned about resident geese. They're, you know, they're a great opportunity for hunters, but there's a lot of problems for agriculture, nuisance issues. So, you know, the flyway is, and to the service, to their credit, has approved them. We've made a lot of changes in the hunting seasons to try to harvest more geese and slow the population growth of those birds. And the fact that the states like New York and Pennsylvania have a one bird more liberal limit that we do in the AP zone, it reflects the concern of the flyway that while we want to protect migrant geese, the states want to do as much as they can to try to curb the growth and address the problems that resident geese are causing. And that's basically why they have a slightly more liberal season than we do.
Wow, you said a mouthful. You said a mouthful. No question about that explanation, ladies and gentlemen. That was spectacular, Bill, and I appreciate that. You answered a ton of questions that I'm hearing, you know, out there in the hinterland with the guides and the outfitters, why this and why that and why New York and why Pennsylvania. Right now it's time to tell you folks about the Great American Outdoor Show. It's the world's largest outdoor sports show, February 2nd to the 10th in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. 650,000 square feet of guns, hunting, fishing, and archery, over 1,100 outdoor exhibitors, more than 200 seminars from outdoor pros and 400 hunting and fishing outfitters, interactive events, your favorite outdoor celebrities, and entertainment for the whole family. There's also an NRA country concert featuring Lee Bryce, Easton Corbin, and Tyler Farr. Live the adventure at the Great American Outdoor Show, February 2nd to the 10th at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Tickets are now on sale at thegreatamericanoutdoorshow.org. Let me tell you about Browning's latest bolt-action rifle. It's the innovative X-Bolt. Designed for total accuracy, the Browning X-Bolt incorporates the new 3-lever feather trigger to give you the most precise feel of any factory trigger. The X-Bolt's hand-chambered free-floating barrel and X-Lock scope mounts ensure that every shot you take stays right on target. Check out the Browning X-Bolt rifle at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. Give them a call at 410-242-6108. Clyde's is your full-line Browning dealer. Browning, the best there is. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number 1 and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bed liner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse.
near you.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
It can't be shut down.
I would certainly be willing to close it down.
And no wall could keep it out.
Walls work.
It can't be stopped.
Winter
officially arrived.
Is officially here.
It's here. And it's cold.
So for the next couple of months, we're officially screwed.
The weather's really changing.
Whatever the season serves up.
Cold, snowy conditions.
Icy and dangerous roads.
We'll help you get through it.
Plow through.
Talk Radio 680. WCBM.
This is a public service announcement test from TakeMeFishing.org to determine if you need a fishing license and boat registration before heading out on the water. Let's begin. Are you a bear? Do you have a beak? Does your name rhyme with Ald Beagle? Do you dart in front of cars? Here's a tough one. Do you have plumage? Do you rub your body against things to mark them? Do you have webbed feet? No, I mean like a... Were you hatched? Do you have fur? I'm not talking back hair. Does your boat fly south for the winter with the other boats? Regardless of how you answered, you need to be licensed and registered because it helps local conservation efforts protect the very natural resources you enjoy boating and fishing in for generations to come. Do your part at TakeMeFishing.org.
St. Jude exceeds any expectation or any dream I could have ever had about a hospital. First was getting David here to save his life. But then I was told we wouldn't get a bill. I didn't quite process that. How's this possible? It's possible through all the wonderful people who donate.
It's pretty amazing when you consider that 7 years ago, we didn't have the treatments we have now. We cure 80% of children with cancer. If you think about that, I mean, go back 50 years, we were curing 20 to 30%. This is the miracle story of modern medicine.
The research here is research that we share with everyone else because overall, we want to help all children that have cancer. What makes that possible is people that give to St. Jude. They really help us to fulfill our mission, and we're so grateful to have them on our team.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures. Saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
More from, not more on. Thank you. I appreciate you correcting that.
3 minute stations.
Bill Harvey.
3 minutes to your next Fox News.
Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife and Heritage Service. Bill's the game bird section leader. Josh Homniak's on deck circle. He's a waterfowl program manager at Wildlife Heritage Service, Maryland. And Paul Padding is with us. He's the Atlantic Flyway representative, Division of Migratory Bird Management in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, operating out of Tuxent Wildlife Research Center in Laurel. I guess that's Laurel.
Yes.
Laurel, Beltsville.
Laurel.
Yeah. That's the address. Got it. Great place. Great place. So... met Johnny Morris down there for the first time. They had a, do they still do the wildlife art show there?
Yes, at the visitor center.
Yeah, I haven't talked about that in years, but we had, there was a Taste of Maryland or something there. They had a bunch of chefs from Washington and Baltimore in there, and they were all cooking wild game recipes and so forth. And, Johnny was there because he had just donated a big pile of money to the, refuge system. So they honored him, and he flies in. And he's not a real outgoing type of guy. And I first met him. I shook his hand, told him who I was, and I worked for him. And I said, you know, I don't know about you, but I said, this is a beautiful evening in October. I'd just as soon be out in the deer stand. And he clapped me on the shoulder, and he goes, buddy, I'd sooner be right there with you. So, you know, that the formalities and Mr. Johnny Morris of Bass Pro Shop didn't sit well together, but he did what he had to do. Great guy. Anyway, we were talking about the process, and you were talking about the different limits in the different states. And one of the questions I get is, how come they're allowed to kill more birds in New York and north of us? And we talked that briefly, but in particular in Canada. You know, they're killing them before they get here. How do we answer that question? Either one of you, Bill, Paul?
Well, I mean, it's certainly the birds are first exposed to sport hunting in Canada.
Right.
And they do participate in our flyway process, and they contribute to all the monitoring. But, you know, Canada is a different country, and they set their own hunting regulations.
You mean U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't have anything to do with setting the season in Canada?
No.
Really?
We don't hold sway there.
Having said that, and they have a completely different schedule for setting regulations. They set their regulations actually for the next 2 years at a time, where we do essentially 1 year. But I can tell you because we talk regularly with their biologists and some of their administrators, they're concerned about the AP goose status. And when the time comes, which will be, I actually think, next year, that they consider, regulations for the following 2 years, they're likely make some changes to reduce the AP goose harvest in Canada, just like we have.
Okay, good. Now, New York. You mentioned earlier that there's a different, kind of a different population of geese that settle in New York. Atlantic population geese, of course, but geese that don't necessarily make it here. Is that my understanding?
So as I said, most of the states in the Atlantic Flyway, that support any number of migrant Atlantic population geese for very long, the parts of their states that are really important for harvest of those birds are classified as AP hunting zones, where the status
of
AP, just like we have here.
Right.
And just like we have here, New York and Pennsylvania, the parts of their state where they harvest very few migrant geese, and basically it's about 90% of a state's migrant goose harvest has to be in what we call the AP zones. If the parts of the state that account for less than 10% of the migrant goose zone goose harvest qualify to be to have a late resident Canada goose season, where they have a longer number of or higher number of hunting days and a higher bag limit.
In Maryland, we
have the exact
well.
Same thing. So
sure.
Less than 95, we have a late resident season. And that, you know, there's a few geese that are harvested there, but as I said before, there's a lot of concerns with resident geese. And the flyway, we've made a lot of changes, and the service has approved them in the 30 years that I've been working on geese and waterfowl. We have not only the late resident season, but there's a September season that's timed to occur before the migrant geese show up in our flyway.
Uh-huh.
It's
begins September 1st.
Yeah, and in Maryland it's from September 1st to the 15th on the eastern shore, and the 1st to the 25th in the western part of the state, where migrant geese are just less likely to arrive there by then.
Right.
But we have a high bag limit. I think the bag limit in Maryland is 8. It actually could be, in some states, it's higher.
Wow.
But that's a chance for hunters to solve some of these, not only to hunt, obviously, but to solve some of the problems that we have with resident geese and do it with sport hunting.
Sure, sure. And, you know, unfortunately, the warm weather in September plays into that as well. You know, you don't want five guys out in the field killing 40 geese, and then, you know, what do you do with them? You don't want to waste them. You want to make use of them. So, you know, hunters kind of temper their shooting on that, although that's what they should be doing, is out there trying to take those resident geese. I mean, how many times have you heard it? Too hot to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's necessary as well. So, and it's a great opportunity. I've done it. I've participated in it. And what did we take one year? We had four of us. We took we were one short of a limit of eight apiece, and six or seven bands. You know, mm-hmm. Of course, all of them were banded at the pond about a half a mile up the road, you know, in the banding survey. But, you know, we did our part. So it can be a lot of fun, no question about it. One of those cool mornings, get out there and take some of those resident birds. Now, you mentioned the extended season in the late part, and there's some people that are concerned that we're killing migratory birds in that late season. But the numbers and the banding returns don't indicate that we're killing a lot of AP geese in that late resident season west of 95 that you mentioned.
No, in Maryland, it's about 3%, depending on the year, it can vary a little bit, but roughly about 3% of all the migrant geese harvested in Maryland in a year are harvested in that western RP zone. So 97% of the migrant goose harvest occurs east of 95, mostly
right.
On the eastern shore, and
well, you guys do very good work. I mean, used to be a section in Anne Arundel County that used to be in that RP zone, and you changed that over to the AP zone, I guess, based on numbers or whatever was coming back, you know, band numbers and so forth, and you know, you hurt me on the farm or something, but other than that, it's
yeah, we. You know, we really look for these opportunities through the flyway to harvest resident geese because it really helps things out. But we also are really careful in monitoring to try to make sure that we're not adversely impacting migrant geese. So in our flyway, every 3 years we take a close look at the band recoveries to see if there's hot spots or zones in these late resident seasons where it just doesn't make any sense anymore to have the liberal limits.
Right.
And I'll add, since New York comes up so frequently, the flyway made a change and it was approved by the service this past year that will go into effect next year. We were seeing some recoveries of migrant geese in New York in the very late part of their resident season, actually, in the part that goes into March. And so we had a sort of a hot spot or an issue there, and the flyway recommendation was to not allow New York to hunt past the end of February in that resident zone in the parts of their state that qualify. So we do regularly look to make sure that the data support these liberal seasons. You know, we want to give states opportunities to harvest resident geese, but we don't want to do it at the expense of a lot of harvest of the migrant geese.
Got it. Talk a little bit about. I just went out of my head. I was thinking about it when you were talking. I'll get back to it. Sorry about that. I have no clue. Here we are on the radio, and I have no clue. You were talking about the going into March and so forth, and some of our season, our late resident season here, does actually go into March. But do the success rates start to go down as the season wanes on? Do the geese become more wary as, you know, not going to the same field or, you know? You get that resident population. Everybody's gung-ho to go to Western Maryland. But as that season goes on, don't those geese start to pair up just like the migratory birds, and they just don't want to seem to cooperate as much?
Yeah, you know, there's what was talk over the years of actually trying to extend some of these seasons to the breeding grounds. They were never really recommended, nor were they approved. But by the time that late resident season ends, which is, it can go to March 10th, they really haven't they may be starting to break up into pairs, and hunting success could wane. But like a lot of the hunting success for geese, it has a lot to do with the weather and, you know, when there's cold periods up north and new birds are pushed down, hunting success can increase. And
sure.
So
I got it. Well, all right. Time for me to tell the folks about Chesapeake Outdoors. Chesapeake is first choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers. If you get your geese today and you want to take them in and get them picked, why not? Take them to Chesapeake Outdoors. They'll breast them out. They'll pick a whole goose. They'll pick your ducks. They'll do whatever you desire. You just check them in, go to lunch, and come back, and they're already done, ready to go. Chesapeake Outdoors also carries everything for waterfowl, the largest selection of waterfowl calls in the region, decoys, steel shot, gear, camo by Banded for deer hunters. They carry the Scentlock too. Large selection of all kinds of clothing and boots and hips and waders. Crossbows by Excalibur and 10 Point and Raven and Barnett and more. Costa sunglasses for those bright days. Yeti coolers to take your bag home, and Bubba blade knives if you so desire. They even sell the Rambo bikes if you want to get back into backcountry. At Chesapeake Outdoors, Route 50 East, Exit 39B, Dominion Road on Kent Island. Check out the sales on tree stands and select crossbows, too. Good savings on those. 410-604-2500, Chesapeake Outdoors. Let me tell you one more time about the Great American Outdoor Show, the world's largest outdoor sports show. It's called the Great American Outdoor Show. It's February 2nd to the 10th in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. 650,000 square feet of guns, hunting, fishing, and archery, over 1,100 outdoor exhibitors, more than 200 seminars from outdoor pros, over 400 hunting and fishing outfitters, interactive events, your favorite outdoor celebrities, and entertainment for the entire family. An NRA concert, a country concert featuring Lee Bryce, Easton Corbin, and Tyler Farr coming up, too. Live the adventure at the Great American Outdoor Show, February 2nd to the 10th at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg. Tickets are now on sale at greatamericanoutdoorshow.org.
WCBM, Baltimore.
Well, it's a gloomy start to the weekend. No sugarcoating that. Looks like some rain's around for the first half of the day today. I think by afternoon we might see a break in the action, though. High today near 50 degrees. Low tonight at 40. Brighter weather tomorrow. Sunshine, 51 degrees. I'm Scott Laurie. I'm more at the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
It's time for the National Outdoor Show. Coming up February 22nd and 23rd at the South Dorchester School, 3485 Golden Hill Road in Church Creek, Maryland. It's just $8 for adults and $4 for kids to get in. This is the home of the World Muskrat Skinning Championship. You're now in muskrat country, the heartland of sportsmen, trappers, watermen, and wildlife. Proud to show you the best that comes from our boot-sucking marshes and the flowing water that surrounds them. Most of all, we hope to share the unique spirit and character of our hardworking people who keep one foot in a technologically savvy world and the other stuck deep in our traditional old school ways. A weekend of shopping, you can eat seafood and muskrat, see contests like the Muskrat Skinning Championship of the World. Remember, visit the National Outdoor Show, February 22nd, 23rd in Dorchester County, nationaloutdoorshow.org. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie Spray-On Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Bedliners rated number one, carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800.
Baylinex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Long time no see, buddy. How's it going? When did you get back?
Hey, good to see you. I've been home for almost a year, just trying to adjust and get back into the swing of things.
Well, it looks like you've been busy. I always see those pics you post of you and your family at all those events. What gives?
Oh, yeah, VetTix. VetTix gives.
What's VetTix?
VetTix is an awesome charity that gives free event tickets, you know, like concerts and sporting events and shows, to currently serving military and vets, including immediate family of troops killed in action. You wouldn't believe how these events have helped me adjust to being back. Just like a good time that I could have with my family, and you know, all these new happy memories we're making are priceless.
And it's nice to know that people appreciate your service and your sacrifice.
Yeah, it is.
Listen, I've actually got extra tickets. Can I donate them?
Yeah, it's easy. Just go to vettix.org. It's a great site. You could give your extra tickets and other vets like me can sign up to get them.
Cool. I'm on it, buddy. Good to know you're back. And hey, thank you for your service.
Talk Radio 680 WCPM.
Now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, we're back. Thank you, Ira, for the kind consideration in recording the show today. We're with Bill Harvey, who did the last couple of segments with us. He is the Game Bird Section Leader from the Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife, and Heritage Service. Paul Padding is here. He's the Atlantic Flyway representative from the Division of Migratory Bird Management of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Laurel. And then joining us for this final segment is Josh Homiak, Waterfowl Program Manager at DNR's Wildlife and Heritage Service. And Bill's out of Cambridge, Josh is out of Y Mills, and Paul is out of Laurel, as we mentioned. So we want to thank you guys for, you know, making the journey here today to do this show, and greatly appreciate it. Paul, briefly, a couple of years ago, we changed our establishment of seasons from an August deadline to now a February deadline, I believe.
Right. Well,
I know it's a long...
Vaguely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. That was in 2015 we changed the system, and we switched from a system of using the current year's biological information to set the regulations for the upcoming hunting season. That's what we did for many, many years. We switched over to using that year's information to set the regulations for the following year.
Simple.
And the reason for that was mostly bureaucratic in nature. There was too tight of a timeline between getting the information from the breeding grounds and the banding stuff to getting to a flyway meeting to get flyway recommendations to the Fish and Wildlife Service being able to publish hunting regulations in time to have a hunting season. A factoid about waterfowl hunting regulations is that they're permissive in nature. Most regulations tell you what you must do or what you may not do.
Right.
Without waterfowl hunting regulations, we have no waterfowl hunting. The Migratory Bird Treaty Act says there isn't going to be a season unless the Secretary of the Interior opens one every year. So we had to get these things published by the time the hunting season started. Otherwise, there would be legal jeopardy attached if you went
of
out
course.
Hunting on what should be opening day. So we ended up having to switch over to a system where now we're using the current year data, biological information is being used to set hunting regulations for next year, and that's what you see with what's going on right now with AP geese regulations.
Perfect, perfect. And that's where you come in, Josh.
Yeah, so under the new system, we'll get the federal frameworks from the Fish and Wildlife Service Christmas time, early in January or sometime in January at the latest. We sort of know what they're going to be ahead of time, but we'll get them officially about that time. And then that allows us to start our public review process of the seasons for the upcoming hunting year. So to set the schedule, we're looking at getting these frameworks for this year, which we already talked about for AP Canada geese. It's going to be a 30-day season and a one-bird daily bag for Maryland. So we're getting that stuff. We know it's coming out officially soon, so we need to do our public review process to see where we're going to put these 30 days. We've had pretty stable AP Canada Goose framework for a long time. It was 45 days for many years and then 50 days for the past few years and two birds per day. And the seasons were pretty much the same every year. We had a week-long season around Thanksgiving, and then we'd put the remainder of the days on the calendar starting after deer season and running through the end of January into the first couple days of February. But this year is going to be a change. We only have 30 days to work with. So where do we put those 30 days on the calendar? And we start considering that by running some options by the Migratory Game Bird Advisory Committee, which is a Citizens Advisory Committee. The members of that committee are appointed by the governor. They're generally made up of waterfowl hunters and people that are, you know, that these issues are very near and dear to their heart. And so we run those, some basic proposals by them. You know, it would be the same for duck season. We have a 60-day duck season. We have three splits. We put the splits, you know, in October, November, and then at the end of the year. Brant season's here, snow goose season is here, AP Canada goose season is here. They consider all these things every year and give us feedback. After we get that feedback, we will compile it and consider it, and we release proposals to the public in February, early February, for public comment, you know, from the general public. And we receive that public comment in a couple different ways, through our website, Facebook, through the phone, fax, Pony Express, you name it, we'll accept public comment, you know, for that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, sure. And we have a public meeting that's held on the Eastern Shore every year. Every year where folks can come to the meeting and tell us their concerns in public too. So that's the kind of the final way we gather that comment and we consider it, run it back by the Migratory Game Bird Advisory Committee and also the Wildlife Advisory Commission, another citizens advisory group appointed by the governor that provides feedback into all of our hunting seasons and regulations. And at some point we'll finalize that, and then we have to send it back to the Fish and Wildlife Service by mid-April. I think it might be April 14th or 20th or somewhere in there. And once we send it to them, it'll go into their mill and be published in the Federal Register at some point later in the summer, finalizing the seasons for 2019-20. So
right.
it gets difficult at some point to keep the years straight. You
sure.
know, you start midway through 18 working on the seasons for 19-20.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. And I've been to a couple of those public meetings. I haven't been in the last couple of years. I think the last one I went to is when they reduced the season length for sea ducks. And that was quite a contentious. I mean, just that much of that meeting was spent on sea ducks, but it was very contentious. And they can be. You get a lot of public input when I'm sure the March meeting will be just as animated.
We expect that, yeah, we'll have a fair amount of attendance. We expect and hope we have good attendance at that meeting. You know, I said earlier, you know, we've had pretty stable regulations for ducks and geese for quite a number of years. And I think with that, the stable, you know, moderate to liberal regulations, people's interest in coming to the meetings kind of waned. And,
right.
You know, and the other thing that impacts that, too, is there's many more forms to communicate, you know, nowadays. We accept public comment through social media and through the website. You don't have to leave your couch. You know, you don't necessarily have to travel to the meeting to
I'm familiar with social media and comments that are made quite frequently.
You are,
And you don't have to leave your couch. And you don't have to be educated to respond either. You just have to respond. Hit those, you know, hit that send button. Hit that energy.
You know, from a state perspective, it gives you a lot of opportunity to collect comment, though. And that's a good thing. But I think this year, though, you're right. I think there'll be people that are that will be interested in coming to the meeting, and that those dates, the public comment period and the meeting itself, there'll be a press release that we issue in late February. So all that stuff will be announced, and you can look for that on our website, and we'll be emailing it out to people, and you know, it'll be available in various outdoor press publications. I'm sure you'll talk about it on the show.
I'll talk about it here. Absolutely. Yep. So we'll, if we get it in time, we'll put it in the next Hunting Quarterly magazine. I just want to refer folks to the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. You can read that online. You don't have to leave your couch at mdhuntingquarterly.com, and that's all spelled out. We do have two articles that you and Bill put together, one of the latest update on Canada geese, and then I actually published the FAQ, the Frequently Asked Questions, that's on the DNR website in there as well. Yeah, just to get more information out there, you know, to try and get people to understand what's going on. I mean, I've certainly learned a wealth of information here, and I hope our listeners have too. And, of course, this show will be available on podcast. We're broadcasting this on January 5th, so we'll be podcasting it out in about a week, so still during the middle of the waterfowl season, people can refer to it and listen to it at their leisure as well. And so we want to certainly thank all you for being here today and taking time out of your busy schedules, and you didn't go waterfowl hunting today right here in the season. Early season this year was a little bit influenced by fog and warm weather, and you know, I'm not sure that there's that many birds here yet.
The early part of this split that just started, you're talking about.
Friday
was a foggy day.
It was
hard to see what was coming or going on Friday, that's for sure. And warm and rainy on Saturday. I suspect Saturday was probably a little bit better. I heard a fair amount of shooting from around where I live. I didn't get out myself on Saturday. But yeah, it seems, you know, we feel like there's a fair number of geese around, but they seem to be in pretty large groups and not
concentrated.
Concentrated and not moving much. And you know,
they don't have to. There's plenty of grass to eat.
There's plenty of food out there, I think. And you know, we'll see. We get some colder weather.
Some frozen ground and cold fronts coming in and
make the hunting a little more exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So, any final words, Paul?
Well, Bill and I were out yesterday.
Okay.
We saw a lot of geese, but we turned out to be not just conservationists, but preservationists.
Really? Preservationists?
Yes. We did not harvest a single bird.
No, didn't harvest a bird. Was it for any lack of trying, or they just didn't show up?
They didn't cooperate.
We'll leave it like that. We have a word for that. In the blind, sometimes we just look at them and call them ignorant. Being ignorant today.
That's the best you can say.
That's exactly right. So, well, fellas, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that. I don't know if we've ever put a show, comprehensive show like this together. I know Larry used to come in and do a waterfowl show from time to time, and it was he covered a few of these topics. But this has been extremely comprehensive, and it's been enlightening to me and hopefully to our listeners. And I mentioned the podcast, I mentioned the quarterly, you mentioned the public meetings. Keep an eye on the DNR website. The regulations are in the Guide to Hunting and Trapping for this year. If you haven't gotten out yet, that's a good reference for you. It's available online, and any licensed agent will have copies of hard copies of that publication as well. So also want to thank Ira Siegel for helping us today in studio, running the running the recording equipment to make this show possible. And we want to thank our listeners and our sponsors to begin the new year of 2019. We're looking forward to great things in 2019. And, you know, this is the kickoff. And so couldn't do it any better. So thank you, Paul, for being here. Thank you, Josh, for being here. Bill back there, thank you for being. I can't see your heads nodding on the air, but it's okay to comment. You're allowed to say something.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity.
All right, guys, thank you very much. Hey, folks, it's goose season. It's deer firearm season. Last couple days, so get out, stay out, and especially be very safe out there.